Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and good night, wherever you are in the world. Welcome to a special episode of Endurance Chat. I'm Floodman11. With me today is Cookie Monster FL. How are you today, Cookie?
Doing well, Flood, doing well, Flood. It's starting to warm up here, so that means it's going to get colder down there. So hopefully that's a little bit more comfortable, I guess.
No, I hate the cold. It sucks. But anyway, we should be talking about the World Endurance Championship, shouldn't we?
I mean, it's cold over in Spa, so it's an easy transition. I mean, I was just trying to set
actually, up, no, it's... Well, I mean, it is right now because we're recording this when it's, like, midnight at Spa. But, like, it has been a very warm and sunny weekend at Spa-Francorchamps, so this is not quite what we're used to at Spa. Anyway, we're doing a little kind of in-between quali and race podcast here, a little snippet, just trying to wrap up everything that's happened in the last 3 or 4 days in the World Endurance Championship. And hey, if people like this, we might actually do a bit more of this, like, for the other rounds, because I actually don't think that's a bad idea, because it does give us a chance to wrap up on some of the big news. And Cookie, hasn't this weekend been something else so far?
Nervous trepidation has been the theme for me so far going into this. Really just started when the whole weekend started. I mean, really kicked off with, shall we just start with Janetta? But had two installation laps for both of their, or single installation laps for both of their cars, with weird sticker placements, some peculiar names withdrawn on entry lists, the lack of anything going on, no comments. I think we've been able to piece everything together with thanks to all the actual journalists that are involved here, but it was great to kind of play along, or kind of not play along, but ride along kind of with all the news going on.
Yeah.
Very weird now. So LMP1 just from being very confident and potentially Miss EOT class to what is going on?
So if you have been under a rock for the past 3 or 4 days, Janetta have already pulled their cars from the first round of the series. So as Cookie said, they did a single installation lap with each cars in each of the practice sessions. They did not go out in qualifying, and there was whispering around the paddock that there was funding problems. And then as soon as qualifying finished, it came to light that Janetta would not release their cars for the race. And yeah, because apparently they didn't get paid, and Janetta won't get paid. So yeah, that's basically what it is. We've already lost two cars from LMP1 because of money. Yay.
I did comment in that thread. I believe that was like 10, 11 days ago now that was posted. Kind of with the nervousness with that all. And I how much of a realist I am, Flood. So there was a little bit of, I thought there was potential inevitability when you hear that kind of news that there's something to it. And by which it was just kind of, you've seen these kind of schemes go along that way before, and the way that was spelled out. I mean, sure, podcasts are now everywhere, including us, but, it seemed grounded enough to kind of be real. And obviously now with kind of everything going on here and what we're now hearing in terms of how long this has been going on 2 months wise, I guess, in terms of payment issues, that this is going to be the outcome. And it's again, very, very shocking to me that this wasn't really picked up on until now. I guess there was enough cover, or there was enough, I guess Manor was probably paying, and Janetta were probably paying as much of attention to what is it? CFEC we're going to do
in terms of CEFC-TRSM Racing.
But I think they were just being dragged along with everybody else in terms of the debtors, collectors, or whatever. And now everybody's all of a sudden going, all right, where's all of our stuff? We want it. And this is kind of Janetta's way of going, all right, here's all of our stuff. Where is the money that you said you're going to give us? Kind of.
Yeah,
thing.
Exactly.
And hopefully this can turn into still a team continuing.
Well, the chairman of Janetta, Lawrence Tomlinson, has said that we have all the ability, the kit and the personnel and blah, 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 blah. We have the latest LMP1 cars confirmed and fully paid up entries for the World Endurance Championship, including the entries at Le Mans, but we're unable to race simply because funds aren't flowing. They're saying it's a temporary instantaneous cash flow problem. So On just, but like with the parent company, this CEFC company, apparently the employees haven't been paid for the last like 3 or 4 weeks or something ridiculous. So,
well, they have like 30,000 employees, 15,000 are potentially going to be cut, you know, for like, it's, you know, for lack of a better term, it's a shit show. Like, it's
basically.
That is, and to be, and to have that name still attached to it, I feel like it's just, is not good at all. But, I think the positives of this was just that I think structural wise, this is their title sponsor. But it wasn't like they were running everything off of that title sponsor money. The title sponsor money was just helping pay to get this car, the extra testing, the extra, you know, entry fees, obviously, and to get them in there and all that other stuff to do all the extra bits they need to actually go and perform on a race weekend.
Yeah.
But Ginetta themselves, in terms of getting this car designed and doing all this, wasn't worrying about, you know, that primary sponsorship money coming in, I guess, in a way. And the way I hear it, too, was that there was that rogue team that pulled out. That was the original team that was basically going to take over kind of primary money in terms of that, and then it was going to kind of kick it out, you know, from that aspect. So it's an interesting thing, and I obviously we're just still getting information of it, like today. So
what we're saying is that it's just a mess. It has just been a mess, and going from the top car at the prologue, in terms of the privateers to now, it's just is kind of crap to see that. So hopefully we do see that both Ginettas ready and all set for Le Mans. If not, I think one of the reports that we saw was that KCMG have been asked to mobilize their team as the first reserve entry for Le Mans in LMP2. So we could see KCMG at Le Mans in a Dallara, which makes me very happy because that thing looks gorgeous. But yeah, so that's the story of Ginetta so far, and I can already hear our good friend DC3 just kind of sobbing in the fetal position in the corner. And then he'll find out about the Ginetta news because, of course, he's taken a sabbatical from the internet because of his exams. So, I'm so sorry for you, DC3. but then there were eight in LMP1. And then we had qualifying. And qualifying was looking fairly interesting. A good battle between the two Toyotas, which had dominated much of the weekend, bar FP3. And then we had one of the biggest accidents I've seen in the Eau Rouge Radeon complex for a long time. We saw, was it... Now, I don't want to say his name wrong here because that would be pretty bad of me. How do we say his name? Petro Fittipaldi? Is it Petro?
It's like Petri...
Petre?
Yeah, it's like something like that. I don't know. Yeah. I don't even want to do like the R-roll stuff because I just would feel like an idiot doing that.
In the chat room are saying Pietro. Is that right?
Pietro.
Pietro. Or something like that. Yeah, I got
Fittipaldi,
it. it looked like the car, the BR1 Dragon Speed car that he was driving, it looked like the electronics cut out for a moment because you could see on the slow-mo that the lights and everything just shut off. Now, the car, like the LMP1s, which are so reliant on the electronic component, that probably is the reason why he's crashed, if that's the case. Would you agree?
It definitely contributed to it. Whether or not it just cut out, and that obviously, I mean, if you lose the ability to steer for half a second while you're going up, from Eau Rouge into Radeon and Radeon. Oh my god. You're gonna probably end up going way off track. But I don't know. Did he even have brakes? That's the thing. It almost looked like he was trying to kind of continue going and at the last second realized he wasn't gonna make it and went straight, but then at the same time it almost looked like he wasn't slowing down at all. It just looked like the power cut and he just had partial steering and that was about it and just went straight into the wall. So
yeah, it's a really confusing incident, and this also came off the back of one of the SMP Dallaras having an electronic problem on the Kemmel straight and shutting down as well. So it could be something that's systemic to the BR1 Dallara. So that is kind of scary.
It'd be strange. Yeah. I don't know how that just seems so strange to have gone through all that testing, unless they're just using a qualifying mode, which is just pegging out the motor or doing something stupid with the electrical bits. But maybe it's Eau Rouge itself, just you know, because they've been really bottoming those things up pretty gnarly about that, especially with the Dragon Speed. That's been on a high downforce setup too, so that's a lot more pounds, you know, of pushing air kind of. Yep. So
yeah,
scary stuff. I mean, usually you don't see these kind of accidents, especially in prototypes. They're really, really structurally sound. So this is either a monocoque failure. A monocoque failure has to be it. You can't just break both your legs like that and not have something intruding in a cockpit. So
we haven't actually talked about that yet. And so, as Cookie just revealed to everyone who didn't already know, the consequences of the accident were quite severe. Firstly, the car was destroyed, but more problematic was that Pietro It's said that he's got fractures or suspected fractures in both of his legs, which made the recovery of the driver and the extraction of the driver very difficult. So we were stuck for a long time. I think it was about half an hour with no images of what was going on because of the sensitive nature of the extraction. But otherwise, there's the WC Twitter has reported that he was conscious throughout the entire ordeal, and that's always a good sign. It means that there's not very likely that there's any sort of head injuries, and that his other injuries are not life threatening. So we wish you all a speedy recovery, Pietro. I feel like I got that right as well that time. I did it.
Congrats! I'm proud of you.
But that does remove another contender from LMP1. This, of course, being the Dragon Speed car, which we weren't really expecting to be in contention anyway, because let's be real here, Heinrich Hedman. Anyway, so hopefully we see him back soon. He was lined up to race at the Indy 500 and at Le Mans, of course, and for the rest of the WC season. So hopefully we see him at some point in this season again, because honestly, it didn't look like a pretty accident. I mean, no accident at Eau Rouge is pretty, but that one especially didn't look pretty.
But this is probably 4 years since the last serious accident we've had in a prototype. And this is, and again, we will say, obviously, that needed a change. That was Memo Gidley's Rolex 24 accident. I think that was 2014.
Yes, because that was the first time I watched the Rolex 24 properly. No, yeah, because it was the first year of the merger.
Right, yeah, that was the P2s and the DPs, and that was running into the back of the Rizzi. And then that really messed up Memo's day.
and every other day since.
But that was a tube frame chassis, so that was kind of expected. So this is, more of a very much of a head-on collision with the barrier too. I'm sure it impacted the wall.
Yeah,
but it's probably what I think is going to be the main drag away from this, is that thing probably went through the tires and hit the wall still.
Yeah.
So we'll see what happens from that. But yikes.
Yeah, just a quick thing before we move on. Do you reckon there is a case to be made for putting Tech Pro or safer barriers at that point in the track? Maybe not safer.
Safer barriers. Pro. Oh, yeah, safer barriers. Yeah.
Safer, you sure? Safer, I thought, were generally more for, like, side-on impacts, you know, so, like, around the edge of an oval.
I would say safer barriers that are, like, extra, like, 2 to 3 times as tall.
Okay.
I just have those behind Tefco or something. So you have the rubber to stop cars upside down or barrel rolling or parts or whatever, and you got a cushion for that. But then you also have something that absorbs a more violent impact into the wall that hopefully, I mean, because the problem too is that everybody doesn't want it to vector back onto the track. Yeah. But I mean,
and that's at the same time, part. If he'd had another car coming up behind him and had been sprayed back onto the track, we could have had a much bigger incident. So
it's to me too, though. It's, you know, I don't want to see it go, but everybody keeps calling for all kinds of safety additives for all these things that we all need for specific reasons. So, I don't know. There could be something to be said to have to do something specific about that wall. So, and I'm probably going to be the only person that will ever say something like that, because I just want to see the world burn. So they're changing my Le Mans. They want halos. Well, here, you can
change my Eau Rouge as well.
Yeah, change the Eau Rouge if you want halos. Jeez. Oh my God, I'm acting like a Facebook comment.
so then there were seven. That,
yeah, that's
so then yeah. There were seven. And then the drama didn't stop there in LMP1. Qualifying concluded after the resumption of the session. It turns out that the two Toyotas were 1 and 2. Very strong performance from them. Looks like the EOT has played into their hand a little bit, but you can still say their engineering prowess as an OEM team is what got them to the front, and you'd be completely right. But
quote me that their EOT will be pegged towards potentially privateers for Le Mans. I think that's a given. They've got it. Those privateers got to show pace. Okay, go.
Yep. post the qualifying session, it was revealed that the number 7 car had been stripped of its pole position, sent to the back of the field to start from pit lane a lap after the last. At the conclusion of the last car's first lap. So it was basically a pit lane plus one lap starting penalty for an incorrect identification number for the car's fuel flow meter. So basically a clerical error. A clerical error has put the Toyota number 7 car a lap down already. Well then, Toyota, why do you keep doing this?
Punishment doesn't fit the crime, but if this is the type that they want to dole, this definitely helps this race. hopefully, every other team notices that you can't make a clerical error that might even be as simplistic as, you know, not crossing one T or dotting one I, that you will get paid one lap and pretty much have, you know, the first half of your race destroyed, or potentially all of your race destroyed, just basically by having to fight another lap against your teammate. So.
I think it's breaking the tech regs, because I have seen things with this, with like timing monitors and stuff like that in the in stewarding areas, and they take it pretty damn seriously. But secondly, I think this is a message to Toyota to say, if you stuff up, we will not let you get away with it. Like, they've been given they have an advantage in the EOT at the moment. Like, there is a clear 1 to 2 seconds that they have per lap over the privateers. But I think this is the ACO saying, yeah, we've given you this advantage, but if you squander it, if you make mistakes, if you don't do the clerical stuff right, if you have an incident on track, if your car is not reliable, you will not be able to get away with it. And honestly, I actually think that's a decent thing. I mean, still, the punishment doesn't fit the crime. But I'm kind of okay with this.
I would disagree. This is just not enough effort for me to really get too upset about it. To be honest, I should, but Alonso is going to be up there, so that helps.
Yeah,
and that's why everyone shot conspiracy. But
yeah, conspiracy. I think we've just encountered the Fernando in, Fernando. What did I call it? I called it something funny. Damn it. I had something for this.
Wow.
The Fernando International Assistance Group. Yeah, there we go. I did it.
Organization, maybe?
No, that's the Alonso Comfort Organization.
Oh, Comfort Organization.
Or the Alonso Championship special? Organization.
Making him comfortable?
As in making his wins comfortable. Oh, come on, man.
Okay. No, okay, so yes, I don't know why they have to go lap down, unless, again, I don't know what this specific clerical error in air quotes is, beyond if they were just, oops, we just fumbled with the pencil and accidentally wrote down a wrong number, or they're like, you know, maliciously writing down incorrect numbers. If they're actually weighing what the clerical error is and they held them this long, I would assume that there was more malicious effort into doing that, but I don't know. So, this stinks. It's not like they're not gonna finish 1-2 either way.
Yeah, that's
eight
exactly
just
what
gets
I was
to
say.
Get a lap ahead advantage and probably end up winning. So
yeah, that's literally what I was gonna say. The Toyotas at this point in time have such an advantage that even with this error, even with starting a lap behind the last GTE AM car, I still expect them to finish 1-2. It's going to be like a Porsche Nürburgring 2016 situation. They're just going to walk
plus,
away with it.
Plus 4 laps. Plus 4 laps in the privateers.
Plus 4. Damn.
That might be undering it a bunch, depending on if there's any reliability. But I mean, to be honest, they're getting an extra lap pace anyway in all of this, depending on what they can do.
I would say 2 laps ahead.
Okay.
Yeah. I'll
stay with 4.
8 shoe in for the win then?
Unless there's some classic Alonso luck and they get
combined with Toyota. Hold on.
Tire failure. Number eight with a tire failure.
I would say it's
almost 90%. Right? I mean, come on. It might not even be Alonso. There's just going to be some little thing going on with the 8, but I still think they'll come up with the win, but they'll be like a tire failure.
Oh, God.
They'll just have something stupid happen to that car.
Just quickly before we move on from LMP1, who is going to be the top place privateer? Rebellion or Collars or SMP?
Rebellion.
By how much?
Same lap.
Ooh. Okay. I'm all right. I'm okay with that. I reckon it will be tighter than what the qualifying pace shows. I reckon it'll be tighter than that. Okay, moving on to LMP2. The first thing I want to talk about in LMP2 is from the practice times, Maldonado is actually good at driving these cars. Who would have guessed that a former F1 driver who's won a race in Spain against Fernando Alonso would be good at driving a prototype car?
We can talk at another time because I know we want to keep this short, but I think he's a pretty good driver. He just is sometimes out of control, and he just ended up driving out of control cars all the time. So
yeah,
out of control plus out of control equals more out of control.
I hope that he manages traffic well. I feel like that's going to be the biggest telling point of Maldonado as a sports car driver as opposed to an F1 driver. If he can manage traffic well, if he can keep his head during traffic, then I think it'll be fine.
I mean, you also have to think, too, that the car is also set up for silver.
Yeah.
So it is a very neutral to, you know, a more understeer setup. So you're not going to be able to just kind of push it to the absolute limit of the car's maximum potential in that car anyway,
yep,
given its kind of more neutral setup anyway. So I think these will probably suit his driving style more, and he probably won't crash as much. I think he still will, but
he's sharing that with Gonzalez and Berton. So as far as silver/gold rated drivers go, they're pretty good drivers, so the setup will still be pretty aggressive. Another team who will have a pretty aggressive setup because their silver is great is the Alpine team, who took pole. So big hand to that, because I'm a big Piattiere fan, I'm a big Alpine fan, suck at MJD and more. So I'm happy that they took pole.
Whatever we can just go and diss him, go for it. Just
brilliant.
Pull the trigger. He needs it.
But
keep him centered.
He really does. The thing that surprises
Labra.
Yeah. What's going on with Labra?
Where did that come from?
What are you?
It's Ligier. Like that's my okay. I mean, Labra doesn't shock me in terms of just being a good outfit, but the Ligier, where did that come from? I didn't see that.
I mean, they still qualified last in LMP2, but
yeah, I don't know.
I hope they do well, because it's a pretty cool looking car. The blue and the pink on the white, it makes it look real pretty. But I really hope what this has done.
Sorry,
this,
I was trying to dig at something. Never mind.
It's fine. The qualifying, the practice has actually given me a little bit more hope for LMP2 this season. I was a little worried going in that we wouldn't have the same quality from last season, but we should have a good race, and I fingers crossed that we have a good race. Who do you reckon is going to take home the victory in LMP2?
JCDC or G Drive. I'll probably say JC.
With which car? The Hoping Tongue car? The Mighty 38?
Yeah, I'd definitely say Hoping Tongue.
I'm going to go with Alpine. I reckon I Thierry had a bad year last year. This year's going to be his year. That's my
Thierry definitely could use a good year. He had a horrifyingly I just would not want to be him last year.
It was disgusting being in that car, that G-Drive car. It was disgusting. Next up, GTE Pro. Now, GTE classes, like, on one hand, it's going to be a good battle at the front, but it's going to be a muted battle at the front, I feel, because what we've seen throughout practice and qualifying is that it's really a battle in two. It's really going to be Ford and Porsche at the top of GTE, with one car from BMW looking competitive, and then the Ferraris in the middle, and then the Aston Martins being just nowhere at the moment. It really looks like it's going to be either 66, 67, 91, 92, or the 82 car, the Tom Blomqvist and Antonio Felix da Costa car? Like, nothing else is even coming close at the moment.
I don't even know where... It's going to be interesting just to see how this pans out, specifically at the beginning. I was at the beginning, like 2 to 3 stints, see where the pay settles in the class, kind of before I get a good feed of what's going to happen, because I don't know. Just it's been, I would have thought Ferrari would have been more on pace,
especially with the Evo kit. Like, they brought in this new aerodynamics package for the car, so that way it would be better at this sort of track and all the tracks. Let's be real, but they're just not on the pace. They're kind of, you know, half a second to a second behind everyone else, which is kind of,
it's great. I mean, it's good for the class in terms of being able to shake it up. They have just been dominant, I mean, even here, so it's been great from that perspective, but very perplexing in terms of where they decided to go. But yeah, beyond that, I guess Astons will never qualify well. Or I guess they'll never really just get to a point where they want to qualify well. But because they have racked up some insane amount of testing on that.
Yeah,
but
this is still their competition debut. You can do as much testing as you want, but once you're actually in competition, it's a different story. So, like, I don't want to see Astons hanging out in the back. I don't want to see them getting passed by GTEM cars. That's
Oh, that's going to... I'm really excited for that. That's going to happen a bunch. You're going to see some GTM pros just flying by pros.
And we saw that in qualifying. We saw that the Porsches in qualifying at the hands of Matteo Cairoli and Matt Campbell were up in the GTE Pro field in those cars. Like, the Aston Martins, both of them at one stage were behind Cairoli, which is ridiculous to me. So, yeah, come the start of the race, if we get pros in the top half of the field, we could actually see a legitimate duke for position between the GTEM cars and the GTE Pro cars. Just quickly, before we move on to GTEM, predictions for the race. Who's going to have the stint length pace versus the one lap pace?
Ooh, stint length pace. I'm going to go Ford, even though I really want to say Porsche, and I would really like to see Porsche take it.
Porsche need a WC win.
Fords are looking nasty, though, man.
Oh, how fitting would it be for Jimmy Bruni and his first race back in the WC to win?
You're getting your hopes up, dude.
Dude, I don't even care. Porsche power!
I expect a highlight of Bruni's driving tomorrow. So there should be, in the highlight reel, we should be seeing his driving style shown in here at some point. I feel like he's just going to be dicing with people. It's going to be really a lot of fun to watch. So
love it. Finally, GTEM. Now, this class has been just the story of the Porsche, really. And I mean, part of it was a bit expected because, like, it's the brand new car in the class and they're going to smash everyone. But I don't think anyone really expected to be sort of this dominant. I mean, the Proton cars have just been up the top. Even the Golf car has been outstanding this weekend. And, like, okay, I kind of have to do something that I wasn't really prepared to do. Mike Wainwright, in this car, you are doing a very good job. And I hope you continue to improve. You've come a long way since the Silverstone race of 2016, where you may have caused Brendan Hartley to flip over you. Even though your car qualified last in GTEM, and I don't know why that is. Actually, why is that? I'm confused.
Yeah, what are you looking at?
I'm looking at the final qualifying classification document on FIAWC Alcomel Systems, and it has the Wainwright car behind everyone else. And I don't know why, because I feel like that car was fourth in class.
I don't know. Amon, I've got it P1 in class, but that is only one driver in there.
That's the problem. They only did one driver lap. That's why the car's average is so good. That's weird. They must have had a car. They must have had a lap deleted somewhere, which is a real shame because that car was P4, I think, based on averages. Anyway, at the top though, the gap of the two lap average was 2/1000ths of a second. Mm-hmm. 2/1000ths.
Mm-hmm.
That is ridiculous. When you take in all the variables, the length of the track, the differing conditions, the two different cars, you know, the brand new Porsche versus the 10-year-old Aston Martin, because it's the Paul Dallolana car, and the fact that you have a young pro making his first WC start driving against Pedro Lamy, who has been racing for 20 years, maybe not 30 years, maybe, I don't know.
It's great parody, dude. It's great. Oh, it's fantastic to, and then, I mean, yeah, the Golf Racing UK deletion kind of puts a stinker on it, but there's still some diversity, especially with the Aston Martins. Hopefully the Ferraris will find some, you know, actual race pace to get up there, but great to see that, that Aston Martin still has something left in it. So
yeah,
before it goes away and it will be replaced. So.
And, yeah, even the TF Sport car was doing very well in practice. So I just want to say one more thing about the Porsches before we finally wrap this up. Jesus, the factory livery looks great, but the friggin' all the other liveries, the Proton livery, the Golf livery, they just look gorgeous. They look so good.
They actually tried really hard to get these liveries to look good. And yeah. Or that just might be the medium too. Porsche does have a way to accentuate colors and accents that really pops out at you, especially when they're bouncing on the green hell at
night. And I gotta say, just in general, all the cars look amazing. I can't think of a single car that actually looks derivative or boring.
If we could get the race pace up in P1s, I mean, I would just be completely set. I mean, the cars all look great. I mean, it's a decent amount of technology and everything. There's a lot of interest. There's a lot of like heavy hands that are kind of being thrown around on the track, and it's great. I love it.
So who's going to win GTM?
A Porsche?
You're very bold. Very bold.
I don't know. I don't know. I would say Proton. Give me the Pulsator. Give me a 7.7.
I love that you said that because I agree. And the reason I agree is because Matt Campbell is the best driver in that field. Even better than Pedro Lamy, even better than Giancarlo Fisichella. Who cares about those guys?
You need to calm down.
22-year-old Australian can friggin' do it all.
Can I have a shoey in his honor or what?
I mean, I would. Shoey of iced coffee.
Wow. Oh, God. Make sure it's warm or hot. Oh, no, probably hot. Thanks.
Okay, so the information that I found, thanks to our friends in the discussion channel, Kiwi Chris, who's pointed me towards a breach of maximum speed in the pit lane for Mike Wainwright. 84.7 kilometers instead of 60 kilometers in qualifying. So that's why they got their lap deleted.
That'll do it, unfortunately.
Yep. And on that
clerical
note...
Clerical errors.
And on that note, thank you very much for doing this little quick sort of wrap-up podcast with me, Cookie.
Yeah, no problem, man. This is fun. Hopefully we'll see how fast Toyota wins this tomorrow. But,
I reckon it'll take about 6 hours.
I mean, they could just decide to, like, you know, crash in the first corner or something like that. Oh wait, well they can't crash into each other, so that's good. positive thoughts. We're doing with the season. The season's starting. I'll have the flare up soon. So
that's very exciting. And yeah, make sure you get on board in the Discord and the IRC. I might open up the IRC and just see if people are still in there. And the discussion threads will have a lot of new users, of course, because of the Alonso thing. And yeah, thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you tonight / tomorrow / yeah, whenever the race is. Peace out.
Should we just do a day where we set, like, every week where we just come on and just talk about moderator stuff? People can listen in for an hour just so they can hear the dysfunction behind the sub. Yeah, okay.
Oh, plenty. Anyway, should we actually start?
I'm taking this time to pull up some actual links so I sound intelligent when I speak here.
Tookie, you don't have to worry about that. Nothing you could do could fix that.
Thank you. Thank you. All right, I'm ready to go.
Sweet.